This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Climate change is generally seen as a liberal issue. Conservatives have regularly either denied its existence or man's contribution to it, or pointed to scientists who don't agree about global warming, although most do. But that isn't the case with everyone on the right. Some, like our guests this hour, see this as a winning issue for conservatives, if only they would embrace it. They see it as a winner politically, economically, and for the planet. One GOP pollster says Republicans are really interested in widespread, abundant energy and clean energy, and that's where you can get their attention. Well, it certainly has the attention of Jay Faison and Bob Inglis, and they are working to get the attention of other conservatives on this topic. Jay Faison is a Charlotte businessman, philanthropist, and founder of ClearPath, an advocacy group working to show that climate change is not just a Democratic issue. Thank you for being here. Welcome.
My pleasure.
Bob Inglis is former United States Representative from South Carolina and Executive Director of the Energy and Enterprise Initiative, a conservative-led education effort to build understanding of the role of free enterprise in solving energy and climate challenges. Mr. Inglis joins us by phone. Jay Faison's in our Spirit Square studio. Welcome to you both. Congressman, thank you for joining us as well.
Thanks, Mike. Great to be with you.
Nice to have you here. So given that so many conservatives are not on your side, or say they're not on your side, or find it politically untenable to be on your side, and who all say may or may not believe that human beings are involved in global warming, how do you explain your opposite stance? I'll begin with you, Jay.
Well, 54% of Republicans, we just did a poll with three top Republican pollsters that said 54% of Republicans agree that the climate is changing and humans have an impact on that change. So we're in the majority, actually.
Why isn't that message getting out?
Well, there's a very vocal minority, and that's a problem, I think, with the political system that we have today. You know, both ends of the spectrum speak a little louder, but even on the far right side, we're making a lot of movement towards at least putting some risk on the problem.
I know. Well, before I ask you my question, I'll ask Bob Inglis why he's on this side of the issue as well. Bob?
Well, because I think that conservatives actually have the answer to the challenge. The challenge is it's an economic problem that has an environmental consequence. And so it's people like Jay, champions of free enterprise, who can show that there really is an answer here. And so we're the kid in class with the answer. We just need to raise our hands.
So your poll that you conducted, Jay, was 54% of Republicans believe that the world's climate is changing and that we play, human beings play a role in this. I don't know, if you talk to Democrats, how many Democrats believe that we are part of the problem?
A lot more? It's in the 80s.
In the 90s. So is that part of the problem, that we're almost at 50% of Republicans, but that's only 50%?
It's moving up.
That survey was commissioned by you and your organization, I believe. Why did you commission it, and did the findings surprise you in any way?
They did not surprise me. We've looked at different polling, especially when you look at clean energy. You know, 76% of Republicans believe that we should accelerate what's an inevitable clean energy future. But we did the poll because we feel like there is a disconnect between what Americans are thinking and what politicians think about their electorate. And so we're trying to bridge that gap with this poll.
And I guess the other part of the problem is we have a crop of presidential candidates right now on the Republican side, some of whom are prominent and leading in the polls and prominently denying this. Donald Trump is a climate change denier, no question. He doesn't believe it. Dr. Ben Carson says the science isn't clear. What are you to make of this?
I think it's an issue they haven't looked into. I mean, Donald Trump said that nobody's proven to me that climate change is caused by humans, right? And so I think if the issue gets raised in importance among the party, and it will, by the way, because it's going to be – whoever wins the primary is going to have a tough challenge from Democrats on this issue. So I think you better be prepared. Mm-hmm. I think once somebody like Ben Carson, who's a scientist, a doctor, looks into the issue and looks at the data, I think he would get clear. But if you look at the last debate, this question was asked to Marco Rubio and Chris Christie, neither of which denied that the climate was changing and it was a problem. I think as a party, we've sort of moved on to what's the cost of the solutions. I mean, 6 months ago, the narrative was, I'm not a scientist. Today, it's the economics aren't worth the fix, or the rest of the world is going to, isn't solvable. And our survey says that messaging is really poor. In fact, that's better than, that's worse than build a big government to control, sort of command and control our energy system.
Congressman, you were in the Congress for years, on two different occasions for years. And as you look at this political season and you look at comments like the one Donald Trump has made about no one proving to him yet that there is climate change or that we are responsible for it, and Dr. Ben Carson, who is a scientist because he's a medical doctor, not having looked into it yet, does that trouble you, or is that simply troubling because it's part of our politics today?
Yeah, I think that in those two cases, it's different than the rest of the field. Those two cases, what you're talking about is people that are trying to capture the outside energy, and so they're running with that theme because they're mostly tapping into what activists are telling them. I think the rest of the field, thankfully, is much more open to us. And so, for example, what Jay was just referencing, that exchange between Chris Christie and Senator Rubio was really instructive, where the two of them were clearly trying to find a way toward a solution that fits with conservative values. In the case of Mr. Trump and Dr. Carson, I think what they're trying to do is just capture the energy and enthusiasm of the activists that want to say this isn't a problem. It would be convenient if it's not a problem, because it sure would be nice to take one worry bead off at the strand, right? And so, but this is, for the rest of the field, I think they're just trying to find a way that they can be for a solution that fits with conservative values.
Now, Jay, you've said that you will spend $10 million on efforts to lobby Republicans to embrace climate change, and that you've already spent $165 million in starting your nonprofit, the ClearPath organization, which is dedicated to promoting climate change and the clean energy policies that might have a positive impact on it, and also appeal to conservatives. You were not always on this side of the equation. You kind of stumbled. Actually, you were dragged into this kicking and screaming, weren't you?
16 years ago. So, but that was pretty early. That was pretty early.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Very early.
Yeah, and look, I look at this. Well, let me be clear about, so we funded a foundation. So you could say there's been some numbers tossed around before. And you're right. I just want to be clear. We have a foundation that's $165 million, and I've made a $10 million political pledge, right? So that's where that stands. But I think a couple of things. One, you don't even really need to agree on the level of risk that we have with climate change in order to accelerate a clean energy future. You only need to agree that there's some risk. When you buy insurance for a house, if you have a 0.1% chance of your house burning down, you still buy insurance. I just want to push the Republican Party to buy some insurance, to put some plans in place that accelerate a clean energy future that's going to happen anyway. So we don't really even need to agree on the size of the problem. We need to agree on what is a more dependable, less risky energy system. I mean, centralized energy systems are risky targets for terrorists. Decentralized clean energy systems aren't. We create more jobs. We reduce our dependence on foreign oil. We reduce air pollution, and we reduce the risk on climate. So it's not, we're trying to frame this as a equation that's pretty easy to swallow, mm-hmm. and not just is climate change this huge problem or not.
Well, you've said that there's very little downside to doing what you advocate. You've said that the worst that could happen is that if you're wrong, you reduce your dependence on foreign oil, which we've already done substantially, and in the best case, we save the planet. Are your efforts being hurt by the fact that we have so far reduced our dependence on foreign oil relatively substantially in just the last couple of years?
Well, I think economics do play a part. I mean, we'd be selling more Teslas and more electric vehicles if gas prices are higher. I'm not advocating for that. So I think economics do play a part. But we still do create more jobs per capita in clean energy. We still do emit nothing on clean energy that harms the air or the climate. We still have a safer, less terrorist-targeted energy system. So the benefits are all still there. Economically, yes, there is some impact on the acceleration of this if we drive our costs down by exploring more and more here.
It's Conservatives on Climate Change this morning here on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Vice President Al Gore's film, An Inconvenient Truth, was derided by conservatives. Bob Inglis, should it have been?
I think that what it is it displays a level of alarm that is off-putting to conservatives. It's a tricky thing because, you know, it's sort of like it's like cancer. You know, you want to give the patient enough chemotherapy to kill the cancer, but without killing the patient. And so it is with climate change. You want people to be aware, but not alarmed.
At one point in your political career, you knew that if Al Gore was for it, you were against it.
Yeah, that's right. For the first 6 years, you know, I was in Congress. I said climate change to Al Gore's imagination, and it really was total ignorance on my part. I just knew he was for it, and therefore I was against it.
So what you're saying is he's right, but his approach was just too alarmist.
Well, I don't know that I don't know that's intentional on his part. I mean, in other words, I don't want to be critical of of his, surely not of his motives. His motives are surely good. He wants people to be aware, but it is just a fact of life that when you have the environmental left ringing alarm bells, it's off-putting to conservatives because it seems like they're just, their hair is on fire. And the reality is we don't trust people with their hair on fire to solve problems.
And, of course, the same could be true as liberals look at conservatives and they are having their hair on fire about other issues other than climate change. So what's the solution here? How do we get two sides to listen to each other and at least understand and appreciate, if not agree with, the concerns of that side so that you can get below the surface of the issue and really begin to understand it?
Well, I think that the key is to find solutions, have a solution conversation that fits with the deeply held values on both the left and the right. Not to come to some mushy middle, but rather to say, this is what we deeply believe on the right. We deeply believe that if you put all the cost in on all the fuels and eliminate all these silly subsidies, that the free enterprise system will sort this out faster than government mandates or regulations could ever imagine. And the proof of that is people like Jay Faison. I mean, people who have been successful in free enterprise, they can say with a calm head, there's a way out of this. And really, people involved in free enterprise can fix it. And then on the left, Al Gore can go message to the left, say, listen, we've got a real serious problem, and we all need to nurture and care for the earth, which is the deliverable of progressives, I think, in the political process. The deliverable of conservatives in the political process is solutions that work.
And with that, we have to take a break. We'll come right back with Congressman Bob Inglis and Jay Faison in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Jay Faison is our guest, businessman, philanthropist, and the founder of ClearPath, which is an organization that is setting out to change, to show that climate change is not just a liberal issue and to make changes as a result of that. Former Congressman Bob Inglis from South Carolina joins us by phone. He's the executive director of Energy and Enterprise Initiative and also RepublicN.org. That's REPUBLICEN.org, which we'll we'll talk about. You served in Congress, Bob, from 1993 to 1998, again from 2004 to 2010 as a Republican. When you embraced climate change, you lost, which is why you're not in Congress right now. But you're sticking to your guns. Why was that such a divisive issue in your district?
Well, I was declared a heretic in the midst of the Great Recession, and so now I'm just out on Main Street declaring the heresy. It's really not a heresy that the free enterprise can solve climate change. But the reason it became a problem, I think, is it appeared that I'd gone to the other side, that I had crossed to the other tribe, and I was singing their songs rather than the battle cries of my tribe. And so that's thankfully passing. The trend line that Jay was talking about earlier, I think, is true. And if you go further back, in the 14 cycle, it was I'm not a scientist. Back in the 10 cycle, as I don't believe in climate change, as active atheism, basically, as to climate change. But if you come forward, you see a much better trend line developing where it's exactly as Jay was just saying. Republican elected officials are trying to find a way to move away from what became the orthodoxy of the 2010 cycle that caused me to lose. And they're looking for a solutions conversation.
And you have said that for conservatives, at least, the government is not the solution. Free enterprise is the solution, which is why you started, I believe, the Energy and Enterprise Initiative. Talk about that. What is that?
Well, yes, of course, there's a role for the government in being the honest cop on the beat that says, okay, listen, all players here, all fuels have to have all their cost in, and we're going to remove the subsidies. Now, compete. So the government clearly has to be the referee, the honest cop, that requires that kind of accountability. But then it doesn't need to be the one that's saying, here's how to do it. You got to do it this way, and we got a Soviet five-year plan, and we'll have clunky answers. The better way is just to send a price signal that then causes people in the liberty of enlightened self-interest to pursue their own self-interest. And we'll see innovation happen very, very rapidly.
So that's an approach that the conservatives can embrace, because they embrace that with regard to other issues other than climate change. But you, Jay, say that conservatives should own this climate change issue. Why should they own it? And that's really embracing it. I mean, really embracing it.
Well, I agree with Bob. I think it's the way in which we handle the problem. I think we've got to be realistic about, we live in a modern economy where business and economics drive things much faster and more cost effectively than government mandates. So I guess what I meant by that, or what you're reading, is that I think Republicans do have better solutions.
And Bob, you say that the conservatives are best positioned to lead on this issue. Is that because of your beliefs in free enterprise over big government?
Well, it's Richard Nixon was the only one that could go to China. Bill Clinton was the only one that could sign welfare reform. And I think a conservative is the one to do climate change. I happen to believe if Mitt Romney had been elected, we would be acting on climate change by now. The country
is that because he would have gotten the cooperation of the Republican Congress versus President Obama not getting any cooperation from the Republican Congress?
Correct. And it's just that there's this sense, again, that people with their hair on fire, we don't trust them to solve problems. We trust them to make us aware that the building's on fire. Mm-hmm. But then we look for some calm face and calm head to tell us this is the way to the exits. And so I think that really we will see conservatives step forward and solve this once they figure out a way around the rejectionism, the populist rejectionism that comes out of the Great Recession.
So the person that you're describing as a person with his head on fire talking about the dangers of climate change, it seems to me the biggest person would be former Vice President Al Gore, because of his film An Inconvenient Truth, which I thought was not was alarming because of the facts, but it wasn't presented in an alarming way. Is it just because he's a Democrat and because he's the Clinton vice president that he was seen as somebody with his hair on fire, or was this just bad timing? It was the wrong time to bring this message out for Republicans.
Yeah, I think timing was bad. It's also part of it I can't explain, which is I don't know why fellow conservatives have such a dislike for Al Gore. I mean, he's not coming back. He's not going to have an additional political career. We oddly criticize him for making money at Kleiner Perkins. I mean, that's all sort of strange. I admit that. But I think what it is, too, is that the vice president at times goes beyond and gets into a little bit of a preaching and a sermon, and you can tell that it's a sermon. And that's when he exposes himself to this alarmist sense among conservatives. Again, it works fine for progressives. And of course, at the end of the day, we're going to need him to ring those bells for conservatives, I mean for progressives. But we've got to show on the conservative side that actually you can bring America together here, and that Al Gore's solution is the same as the solution that Republicans could offer, which is just internalizing negative externalities. Hmm.
And Jay, you say that we've been talking about how many conservatives are in denial about this. At least 46% are in denial about this still, according to your own survey. But you say also that Democrats are in denial about the advances and progress we've already made towards staving off further climate change. Is the problem here that neither side can budge from their positions, because if they do, they will be seen as flip-floppers?
I think yes, and I think a lot of it has to do with ideology. I think Republicans believe, and with good reason, that environmentalists and the left have beaten them up for years because they can never do enough on the environment. If they take a step, they should have taken three. And so we've built this divide. We have to meet in the middle somewhere. Natural gas emits half the carbon of coal. It is a good fuel in the interim, it's abundant. We can't be against everything. I would argue that the Democratic Party cannot be against natural gas. It's not realistic, right? So I think there's a spirit of compromise.
People on the far left are certainly against anything that smacks of fossil fuels, which gas is. But people in the moderate range of the left, and even in the moderate range of the right, will say, you can't just abandon fossil fuels or modern society will collapse. We have to get there in increments, and we've got to use all of the fuels available to us in a blend. Is that your point of view?
Well, I would like for you to make that case to the environmental movement, that many of which are on the far left.
That's what I said. The far left doesn't like any of that.
Right, but the environmental movement, a lot of them that are very involved in the environmental movement, are more inclined to be pretty extreme, mm-hmm. pretty extreme, and not in a spirit of compromise where they could come together with energy.
But isn't that the problem on both sides? The extremes of both sides they're not interested in coming together at all.
Yes.
So how do you make that happen? You're a conservative.
Well,
how do you move your side to the middle?
We're trying to build that bridge. And my appeal to the left is take a step towards the middle. Mm-hmm. And my appeal to the right is, you know, don't let the left own this issue. Mm-hmm. Let's come up with our own solutions. I mean, for example, if we take the military as an example, because what we're talking about here is risk. Like the far right of the party has always said, let's build a big military in case of military threats, terrorism, whatever. The left has been less worried about, I think it's fair to say, they've been less worried about risks of wars or enemies or terrorists. And so why is the Republican?
I'm not sure that's fair to say.
I think
they may say that they're less concerned about a military solution to terrorism.
Okay, fair enough.
But go ahead.
Fair enough. I mean, I think the Republican Party would pride itself on, we're prepared for risk. We build up the military as an example. We prepare for, we're realists, we understand risks, and we're going to prepare for them. We're not going to put them in the closet. Mm-hmm. So if that's our stance on military preparedness, Why not on environmental threats?
Well, the military, Bob Inglis, has said several times that climate change is a national defense issue and it's going to be a major issue in the future. Why aren't conservatives listening to the very people that they want to build up all the time?
I think those voices are starting to get through. That's part of this solution orientation that we're seeing in the CNN debate that we were talking about earlier. So I think it's going to happen that those voices are very important to Republicans. And you know what Jay's just been saying is right, that we conservatives are usually the people that are aware of risk. In personality, perhaps, they are risk avoiders. And also surely in politics. It is a strange thing that when it comes to climate change, we have for a while now been proceeding pell-mell in the face of that risk. It's an odd place for us to be as conservatives. Usually we're people who care about risk and move away from it.
If you'd like to join the conversation, you can let us know what you think about all of this on Facebook or Twitter. Just look for WFAE there or email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. Jay, you have said that the move to clean energy and the move to handling climate change is not only inevitable, which is a pretty strong word, but it's one that makes good business sense. When you talk like that, as a successful businessman, as an entrepreneur, as somebody who is a conservative, when you say those things to other conservatives, do you see light bulbs going off?
When I explain it, I do. I mean, let's take what's going on in North Carolina right now, for example. So North Carolina had a subsidy that was arguably too big that was put in place by a Democratic legislature, and it was at 35%. Pretty high level of subsidization. It expired this year, December 30. It's going to expire this year, December 31st, and we Republican legislature took that down to zero.
Yes.
So by going, we created 5,600 solar jobs, and those are direct solar jobs. Indirect, you could argue it's 25,000 jobs in North Carolina, billions of dollars worth of investment, number two in solar in the country, and now we take that down to zero. And so all of that investment that we spent to earn all these things, we now put at risk. And the same thing is happening on the federal level. So if you feel like we should continue, if you make an investment, you should guard that investment. And we're about to do the same thing with the investment tax credit at the federal level. We really do need to talk to our representatives and say, we are for a business-like ramp down of these tools that have built, you know, a really great job base and economic investment for our country, and we're at risk of leaving those behind. So I think we've got to look at the facts and plan well in order to preserve a lot of these economic benefits.
I'm going to come back to that because it's a very important point. And Bob, you have said that you believe that climate change can be solved by eliminating all subsidies. Does that include subsidies for the development of alternative energy sources like solar, or are we talking about subsidies on the oil industry, the coal industry, et cetera?
All subsidies. That would mean no more Solyndras, no more electric car credits, no more production tax credit for wind.
But why not? Why not have an electric car credit if it's something that will get the consumer into those cars more efficiently, more cheaply, at least until the industry comes up to a critical mass where they can afford to mass produce these cars at affordable levels to the average person? Why not subsidize that?
That's the best argument for it. The other argument is that look at the cost of it by way of carbon reductions. It's astronomical. The treasury cost for that reduction in CO2 is astronomical. And so the better approach, as Milton Friedman told us a long time ago, is send a price signal. And so now it's very important, though, Mike, to point out that there are other subsidies. The biggest subsidy of them all is being able to belch and burn into the trash dump of the sky without paying a tipping fee. And that, if we could, that's what the point that we're trying to make to fellow conservatives, is that surely we need to listen to Milton Friedman, who says that, you can't dirty someone else's shirt with your particulates without forcing accountability on that emitter, because Otherwise, you're allowing the emitter to socialize their soot, which creates a market distortion. And so we're surely not for socializing anything as conservatives. And so that's where the big discussion needs to be.
And conservatives on climate change this morning on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. How do you move the conversation in that direction?
How do you move it? Well, I think that you have to have voices out there saying it. And, of course, that's why we're so excited about what Jay Fazin is doing here. This is a voice that's credible as a indication of where the smart money is going. Politics are a lagging indicator. Politicians typically pick up on what's being said by the smart money and eventually start mimicking it. That's our hope.
You say that eliminating these subsidies would bring a true cost comparison to the table and also unleash innovation. I'm not sure that I understand that. Explain it.
Yeah, so it's basically a price signal. When you have all the cost in on all the fuels and all subsidies removed, then what you have is me as a consumer looking for a way to reduce my true energy cost. Right now, I'm not paying the true cost of coal-fired electricity. We are, in fact, as a society, paying the whole cost of coal-fired electricity, just not at the meter. So some of it is by socializing soot that most of us, when we breathe it in, we cough it up. Some of us end up at the hospital. We're paying all right.
So if you eliminate all the subsidies and we end up paying the true cost of electricity, et cetera, the true cost of heating oil and whatever it may be, that falls on the back of consumers. Isn't that a surefire way to stop any progress on a movement toward clean energy? Because people will be up in arms about it. Voters will be up in arms about it.
This is, of course, the challenge, is that, basically what we're calling people to do is rise to full citizenship, to say that, you know what, we're ready to see all the cost. We don't want to be the little kid that says, puts their hands over their face and say, you can't see me, I'm hiding. We're ready to see the whole cost. We're full citizens. We're ready to be responsible.
Bob Inglis is a former U.S. representative from South Carolina and executive director of the Energy and Enterprise Initiative organization. Jay Fasen's in our studio. He is a philanthropist and founder of Clear Path. We'll continue our conversation about clean energy and conservatives in a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Jay Fasen is our guest along with Bob Inglis. Jay is a businessman and philanthropist, founder of Clear Path, which is an organization, an advocacy group working to show that climate change is not just a liberal issue, it is a conservative issue. Bob Inglis is a former U.S. representative from South Carolina and executive director of the Energy and Enterprise Initiative. Just a few moments ago, Congressman, you said that we need a rise to full citizenship because you're advocating the deletion of all, the elimination of all subsidies in the energy world, which would mean the price of gasoline, the price of heating oil, the price of electricity, the price of natural gas would rise at the consumer level, probably substantially. Not substantially, Jay? Not substantially. How much would it rise?
If we look at British Columbia, it would rise 7%, and we could reduce taxes dramatically. They've reduced corporate income taxes from 35 to 28%, and then they provide a dividend to the poorest who needed extra money to pay the energy bill. I think it was $600 per annum. Mm-hmm. So they pulled that the time it was passed. It was 54% in the polling, and now it's close to 70, sort of 6 years later, and they've reduced their carbon emissions by 19% below the Canadian average.
So given that, is the stumbling block here the fact that big oil, big coal, has a significant lobby in Congress that will never allow that needle to move in the direction you're talking about?
Six out of six of the oil supermajors, which includes Chevron, Exxon, BP, mm-hmm. Shell, have all said that climate change is a problem. That needs to be solved, that's human caused, and a couple of them even advocate for a carbon tax. Rex Tillerson of Exxon says we need to tax carbon. It's on his website. I've talked to their climate change. They have a climate change guy and a group of scientists. They understand this very well. They just want predictability. And that's what we're really looking at here is the business community. If we give the business community, back to the case on solar, same thing. If we just give everybody predictability and we have a good long-term plan, a lot of these companies are very, very comfortable with this. In fact, they already price carbon into their worldwide investment decisions. All the oil supermajors do.
Is that because other nations have stricter laws about it?
In part, they think it's inevitable. They think these external costs that Bob's talking about are going to be included and should be included.
The myth is, and I'm not sure it's a myth, that the United States used to be a leader in a lot of different things. And you just told me that Canada is a leader in what we're talking about doing here, eliminating subsidies, having more of it fall on the consumer, but taxes go down, et cetera. And other countries have tougher regulations, which have caused these big oil companies to just factor that into their cost of doing business. Why aren't we leading on this issue? Why are we following on this issue?
Small group of very active, very vocal, caucus-going, primary-voting Republicans.
Are we talking about the Tea Party here, or are we talking about other factions?
Well, the Tea Party is sort of 24%, give or take. My number could be off by a couple, but on human-caused climate change. So they pull very low on that number.
You were defeated by the Tea Party, Bob Inglis, in South Carolina, because you embraced climate change. Are we talking about the Tea Party here, or are we talking about other elements?
Yeah, we're talking about people that are afraid. If you're asking what the reason why we're not acting, well, I think it's fear and distrust. It's fear that we're not going to have an alternative that powers our lives. And that's a legitimate fear. We need to answer that question, and I think we can answer that. And then it's distrust of government. That government, for example, our greatest challenge, really, in proposing this revenue-neutral, border-adjustable carbon tax, for example, in other words, revenue-neutral means you got to give me a tax cut somewhere else if you're going to tax carbon dioxide. And by the way, a $25 per ton price in carbon dioxide means 25-cent increase in a gallon of gasoline, a 1 to 2 cent per kilowatt hour increase in the price of electricity. But if you're going to try to persuade people that, hey, we're going to do this tax swap, there's this enormous distrust of government, which, of course, is justified. Because if you look, for example, at education lotteries, those were supposed to provide more money for education. Well, what it ends up doing is the state legislatures cut funding for education elsewhere. And so education doesn't move anywhere with that education lottery. And so that's the kind of it's fear and distrust. And that's why I think we really need to summon this call for higher citizenship and full citizenship. Now, it is a eat your vegetables message. We realize that. But there's some polling data that shows that eat your vegetables actually is a message of accountability that especially works for conservatives.
Hmm. And you say, Jay, that there is this, on the part of some Republicans, this fear that this whole climate change issue is a Democratic conspiracy to increase the size of government. But you say that there is good evidence to the contrary.
It depends on the percentages and how you sort of slice this thing up. Because that is a small minority that thinks this is a conspiracy, mm-hmm. But the majority does not believe that.
So what you're advocating is to change the words we use in the conversation. You want to hit hot buttons on the conservative side that people believe in, that they embrace, that they understand. And accountability is one that Bob Inglis just brought up. Good business sense is another way to talk about this, in your opinion. What are some of the other ways you could change the conversation by changing the vocabulary?
Well, I think we need to talk about clean energy. We don't, again, I'm going to stress the point, we don't have to agree on climate in order to accelerate clean energy. 76% of Republicans are for an acceleration of clean energy. Mm-hmm. We all want more solar, more wind, but it's not just solar and wind. It's micronuclear. It's electrification of dams. That's a great example that Democrats have been against, that Republicans are for. We have a ton of energy power locked up in our hydro system that we could unlock. So there's a ton of...
Unlock it how?
By electrifying it, by putting generators inside of dams, or even upgrading the generators that are in dams already. there's compromise here, and there's lots of things that we can do. We just need to prioritize energy. Let's start talking about energy and more about a modern energy system.
You praise Elon Musk as a guy who, and I think it's you, he's the guy who invented the Tesla automobile, the all-electric car. That's very expensive, but I've driven one, and it is an amazing product.
I agree.
It is an amazing product, and I want one. I just can't afford it. But he's a guy who decided to develop electric cars and has now moved his attention also to developing better batteries that could someday power a home with solar on the roof. The battery could power the home with no problem. But he's just one guy. And given the fact that this is an issue that really impacts the common good, something we've gotten away from in this country, but it impacts everybody on the globe, on the planet. Why shouldn't government, whose job it is to impact the common good, be involved in helping push this technology, in helping people like Elon Musk, in helping people like you who want this to happen, putting more heads together and more money into the pot? Why shouldn't government be part of this?
Well, look, government can do a lot of different things, and they do subsidize Tesla. I got a $7,000 rebate on mine. But they also increase a lot of regulation. Sorry for that.
And you took the subsidy.
It's a great car. Of course, I'm a business guy. Of course I did. Well, I mean, everybody should take the subsidy. But we also regulate Elon. Elon Musk has a large corporate affairs, a government affairs department.
Right.
We almost stopped him from selling cars in North Carolina. We've stopped him from selling cars in Texas and in New Jersey. I know they're fighting that now. I don't know where the situation lies.
But we've got a lot of regulation. As
we
a sidebar, in North Carolina, they stopped him. They wanted to stop it because his business model is to have no dealerships. You order it on the internet, they deliver the car to you. And in North Carolina, the North Carolina Automobile Association said, you got to have a dealership. So we do. We have a dealership here now.
Right.
Right. That's part of the regulation.
Less regulation. I mean, pull away the regulation. Solar developers
But that's Republicans. Yeah. It's a Republican legislature that did that.
I know. It doesn't make any sense.
Okay. bankers are among the most conservative of conservatives, at least one would hope. And recently, the New York Times reported that one of the world's most powerful central bankers is worried about climate change. That banker is Mark Carney, the governor of the Bank of England, who last week declared that the warming climate presented major risks for the global economy and for global financial stability.
The combination of the weight of scientific evidence and the dynamics of the financial system suggest that in the fullness of time, climate change will threaten financial resilience and longer-term prosperity. While there's still time to act, the window is finite and is closing.
And Mark Carney went on to say that inaction will impose a cost on future generations that the current generation has no direct incentive to fix, but that once climate change becomes a defining issue for financial stability, it may already be too late. That sounds pretty ominous. Do you agree with him?
That's why I started ClearPath. Right there.
And should comments like his be the wake-up call for everyone that Al Gore's film was not?
Certainly hope so. I mean, again, I think this is really risky. I think it's incredibly dangerous. And I think that makes me not less conservative. I would argue that makes me more conservative. Unfortunately, I think my Republican credentials just lowered a couple of notches because I said this is a very big and risky problem.
Yeah.
We are involved with the MIT Institute for Global Change, along with those oil companies that I just mentioned, along with Cargill and all the biggest corporates. And we sit there and we look at models that tie out to other models from University of Maryland and Stanford, and the results are, frankly, very scary. And all the oil companies, for example, are more aware than we are of this. And when I sit there in that room and I look at this and I say, if this has a 10 or 20% chance of being true, I happen to think it's a lot bigger chance.
Mm-hmm.
Then, yeah, I think this should be the top. I say climate change is the biggest risk and biggest opportunity of our time, and that's why I say it. I think the risks are huge.
So Mark Carney, the governor of the Bank of England, went on and expanded on what he was talking about, on the generational aspect of climate change, of dealing with this, by saying that these are his words, tragedy on the horizon. has a cost and an uncertainty that go beyond the usual multi-year business cycles, beyond political cycles of presidential and parliamentary elections, beyond the horizon of central banks and those who operate them, who are bound by their mandates, which I guess is also their stockholders. And he delivered those words in a speech to Lloyd's of London, the great big insurance company. He must have been talking to the choir. Aren't insurers already greatly concerned about the cost of this to them?
It's on our website, clearpath.org. We have a whole article around insurers and oil companies. And yes, that's what's so crazy about this. Munich Re, Swiss Re, Alliance, a lot of the big insurance companies, if not all the insurance companies, are incredibly worried about this. And yet we're not listening.
Some argue that even if America cleaned up its act and did precisely what you want them to do, nothing would change because China and India and other emerging economies are belching this stuff out like there's no tomorrow, and they have consumers who are rising in their spending power who want the cars that we have in America, and they're buying those cars, and it's going to cause just as many problems. So nothing will happen if we clean up our act because China and India are not going to do anything. You say we can push them to change, to clean
up. So if there's one argument that really gets my goat, that one is it. I've spent a lot of time in China. We work with 45 different manufacturers. I'm still executive chairman of a company that does that. I've spent pretty close to a year on the ground there, and I was just there last week. And we were meeting with government officials and state-run companies and entrepreneurs about this problem. They are doing hundreds of things. It just so happens that they are the manufacturer of the world, and manufacturing requires a ton of energy, not to mention the infrastructure they need to put all the people in those places. So they're trying to solve a problem. They're committed to putting more clean energy on their grid in the next 10 to 15 years than we have energy. So for us to blame them, for starters, is not fair. So a lot of this is down to facts and figures and numbers. But between China and, by the way, India yesterday announced a big commitment. Between Europe and the U.S. and China and India, that's over half of the world's carbon emissions. You get those right, and the rest of the world comes along.
Jay Faison on Charlotte Talks here this morning on WFAE. Bob English, you also believe that America can lead a global solution to climate change, but you also admit that in today's political environment, members of Congress have to walk in lockstep with congressional leaders and with the party leadership. Mavericks don't do well in that scenario. How do you make the changes at the political level that have to be made when we have a system that's fundamentally broken?
Well, we need to have this tune that Jay and I are singing here on the radio become more recognizable as a tune that conservatives know and recognize and can tap their foot to. And so I think it will become very recognizable, particularly when you start this solutions conversation, like Jay was just talking about how China is looking for solutions. And the thing that we've got to convince fellow conservatives of is that we can trust them, but we also need to verify. And, of course, one very good way to do that is through border adjustments that make it so that we're certain that they are applying a price on carbon dioxide that's the same as ours. We think that can be done in a World Trade Organization compliant way. And if so, then they have every reason to join us in this effort. Same with India, same with other trading partners. So that's the kind of when we get to that solutions conversation, when we get beyond this question of do you believe or is it a fact, those are very difficult questions if you're a conservative to answer in front of a conservative audience. But if we can change that question to can free enterprise solve climate change, well, that's a question that Republicans can answer in the affirmative in front of the most conservative crowds, because after all, free enterprise can solve problems you don't even have, is what we conservatives believe.
And Bob English, you say it's time to be optimistic about climate change. Jay, you say you believe that climate change presents opportunities. You've said that clean energy is affordable and getting cheaper, and that conservative presidents have solved the world's biggest environmental problems. They can solve this one as well. Jay Faison, local businessman, philanthropist, and founder of ClearPath, and former Representative Bob English from South Carolina, the executive director of the Energy and Enterprise Initiative. Thank you both for the hour.